As the story goes, Robert Picton lured vulnerable women to his pig farm outside Vancouver. There, he tortured and gutted them like cattle. His 600-pound pigs took care of the rest. He bragged about killing 49 women. If he had it to do over, he'd make it an even 50. In 1996, a crew from British Columbia TV News drove to a pig farm in Port Coquitlam, a remote area about 17 miles east of Vancouver, Canada. They were covering a story about one man's fight to lower his farm's property taxes. That man was Robert Willie Picton. Robert worked the farm with his brother David. They inherited it from their mother after she passed in 1979. Their stench was hard to bear. Both men wore dirty clothes and smelled like fresh manure. You'd have no idea they were actually millionaires. They cashed in after their parents died, selling parts of the inherited farm for $5.16 million Canadian dollars. They'd move away from pig farming and were exploring new business opportunities. They even started their own charity. But our reporters from BCTV had no idea they were standing on top of a graveyard. They had no idea the man they interviewed was the worst killer in Canadian history. And had they bought some of his ground pork, they never would have dreamed it might have been cut with human flesh. The life of a pig farmer isn't very glamorous, but that was the life Robert Picton was born into in 1949. His father was an abusive drunk with little involvement in Robert's life. His mother, on the other hand, ruled with an iron fist. Louise Picton was a workaholic in charge of running the family business. She doubled as Dave and Robert's boss. She was so cruel that, as the story goes, Robert hit out and butchered pig carcasses just to avoid her. They'd work long hours on the farm slopping pig muck and butchering hogs. Then the boys would go right to school without bathing. It's no surprise they had very few friends. Their stench wasn't a hit with the ladies either. Some of their classmates called them stinky piggies. Robert dropped out of school at the age of 15 and dedicated the rest of his life to pig farming. On the rare occasions that the Picton boys did wash, Louise forced them to take baths, never showers. Somehow, this led to Robert developing an irrational fear of showering. By all accounts, and even though he was afraid of her, Robert was extremely close to his mother. It makes sense that her blatant disregard for human life fueled his murder spree later on. The following story is based on Robert's retelling to friends over the years. It begins shortly after Dave's 16th birthday. He'd just gotten his license and was learning to drive on his father's red pickup truck. One night, Dave was driving away from the farm when he came across a 14-year-old boy named Tim Barrett walking along the side of the road. For unknown reasons, Dave ran Tim over. It's unclear if this was an accident or if Dave meant to hit him. Either way, Dave slammed on the brakes and inspected Tim's body. He was mangled, twisted, broken, but still alive. Instead of going for help, Dave ran home to tell his mother. Louise and Dave returned to the scene where she gave Tim's body a once-over. Then she shoved him into a deep marsh on the side of the road. Meanwhile, Tim's parents were worried sick. The next morning, neighbors found his body face down in the marsh. Dave's truck may have fractured his skull and dislocated his pelvis, but it wasn't enough to kill him. An autopsy found that Tim drowned to death in the ditch. Now, Louise had plenty of pull in Port Coquitlam, plenty of connections and influence. She was never charged in relation to Tim's murder. Dave was a minor, therefore his record and case were sealed. All we know is that he spent some time in juvenile court. Now, while this story would have impacted Dave more than Robert, it shows what kind of woman Louise was and what kind of influence she had on him. If mom can get away with murder, why can't he? During the 1980s, 90s, and early 2000s, Vancouver's downtown east side was among Canada's poorest neighborhoods. There wasn't a slum in the country that matched the level of squalor and depravity in this 10-block urban dystopia. The sidewalks were cracked and full of used condoms and needles. Garbage littered the alleyways between the rundown motels and pawn shops. To the locals and the cops who cleaned up after them, this part of Vancouver was nicknamed Lo-Track. Lo-Track was the heart of British Columbia's drug and prostitution scene. Heroin and crack cocaine were plentiful, supplied mostly by motorcycle gangs like the Hells Angels. Shared needles and unprotected sex led to the highest HIV infection rate in North America. A survey in 1995 found that 73% of the girls working in LoTrack had entered the sex trade as children. All of them were single mothers, averaging 3 kids each. By 1998, LoTrack averaged 1 drug overdose death per day, the highest in Canadian history. So when sex workers went missing through the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, nobody batted an eye. Meanwhile, Robert Picton was living large on his farm. He and Dave had moved away from farming and started a charity foundation called the Piggy Palace Good Times Society. The foundation claimed to organize, coordinate, manage, and operate special events, functions, dances, shows, and exhibitions on behalf of service organizations, sports organizations, and other worthy groups, whatever that means. In reality, these charity events were wild raves and sex parties hosted in the slaughterhouse. Robert bussed in prostitutes from LoTrack to entertain his guests. His parties attracted upwards of 2,000 people, meaning he needed enough drugs and women to go around. The Hell's Angels were happy to supply him. During a charitable event in 1997, Robert tried to murder a sex worker named Wendy Estiter. He handcuffed and stabbed her multiple times after they began fighting. She managed to disarm Robert and stab him with his own knife. She escaped and ran to the cops while he was being treated at the hospital. Robert was arrested and released on $2,000 bond, but since Wendy was a drug addict and a sex worker, prosecutors didn't think she'd make a credible witness, and they didn't move forward with an attempted murder charge. Robert's charity was disbanded in 2000 after a blowout New Year's Eve party. When police followed up on neighbors' noise complaints, the Picton brothers couldn't produce any financial records proving it was all in the name of charity. That same year, Vancouver police finally launched an investigation into LoTrack's missing women. They faced mounting pressure from Indigenous groups, as many of the missing women were Natives. The case involved 65 missing people dating back to 1971. After ruling many out, the list narrowed down to 16 LoTrack prostitutes missing since 1995. But the more they dug, the more names they found. The list ballooned again to include 54 missing LoTrack women who vanished between 1983 and 2001. They tracked and arrested some suspects, but most of their efforts were in vain. Little did they know these women were being lured to Robert Picton's pig farm for slaughter. Investigators caught a break when they met 37-year-old Bill Hiscox. Bill was a widowed alcoholic who worked for the Pictons. He'd pick up his paychecks from the farm and remembered how creepy it was. While most places have guard dogs, Robert and Dave used a 600-pound boar to patrol the farm. Bill had never seen a beast so big. It would chase and bite anybody who ventured too close. Bill knew all about Robert's wild parties. He'd also been reading about missing sex workers in the newspaper. It didn't take a genius to put two and two together. Women showed up, but they rarely left. Bill told police about Robert's converted bus with tinted windows. It was Willie's pride and joy, Bill said. He wouldn't part with it for anything. He used that bus to venture into LoTrack, looking for girls to bring back to the farm. Sadly, that farm and Robert's face were the last thing they'd ever see. Robert Picton's killing spree accidentally ended in February 2002. Police showed up to search the farm for illegal weapons. What they found was much, much worse. Investigators found personal items belonging to many of the missing women. Follow-up searches uncovered remains or DNA evidence matching at least 33 victims. Robert was arrested on 2 counts of first-degree murder. 3 more charges came in April, then another in September. Robert's farm was looking more and more like a graveyard every day. During a taped confession, Robert told police how he killed these women and disposed of their bodies. Some he'd simply handcuff and stab. Others, especially the heroin addicts, he'd inject with antifreeze. This explains the syringes found on his farm that were full of blue liquid. Once they were dead, Robert ground their bodies in the slaughterhouse and fed them to his pigs. There was a chance Robert mixed human flesh with the pork he sold to the public. The British Columbia Health Authority quickly issued a warning regarding Robert's tainted meat. By 2002, headlines across Canada read, 54 women fed to pigs. But were they really? Will pigs eat human flesh, bone, hair, nails, and teeth? The fact is that pigs will eat just about anything you put in front of them. It's dinner as long as they can chew and swallow it. There are also several documented cases of pigs eating people worldwide. In 2012, a 69-year-old farmer went missing in Coos County, Oregon. Later, his family found his dentures and bits of his body in the pig pen. He'd fallen in and was overwhelmed by the 700-pound hogs. They ate and digested most of him. In 2019, a Russian woman had an epileptic episode while feeding her pigs. She collapsed in the pen and was eaten alive. In 2015, a farmer in Romania died of blood loss after being attacked by his hogs. In 2014, a 2-year-old Chinese boy was eaten when he wandered into the pig pen. In 2013, an Italian mob boss was eaten when a rival family tossed him to the pigs. It's rumored that mafiosos have always used pigs to get rid of bodies. Drug traffickers in Rio de Janeiro have begun raising hogs in the favelas for the sole purpose of disposing of their rivals. The only things pigs can't digest are hair, teeth, and large bone fragments. They'll also spit out dentures, hearing aids, pacemakers, and other foreign objects. Otherwise, if you give pigs a body, they'll eat the whole thing in about 2 days. But that doesn't destroy DNA. The police are well aware of the feed the bodies to the pigs technique. If you're a suspected killer with a pig farm, that's the first place they'll look. Thankfully, Robert Picton was busted at a time when DNA evidence was fast becoming the most popular way to crack the case. By 2006, Robert was facing 26 counts of first-degree murder. Those charges were split into two groups, 6 concrete cases and 20 not-so-concrete cases. The reason was not to overwhelm the jury. If they could get Robert on at least 6 charges, they could lock him up for life. It would cost millions of dollars and take several years to unpack all 26 murders, and it's not like he would get any more time added to his sentence. The media was barred from releasing any information before the trial began. Once it did, the floodgates opened and the public learned just how gruesome Robert's crimes actually were. The crime lab tested and confirmed 80 DNA profiles, about half male, half female, present on evidence taken from Robert's farm. Police found a loaded .22 caliber revolver with a dildo attached to the barrel. Robert explained that he attached the dildo to use like a makeshift silencer. They also found night vision goggles, furry handcuffs, and syringes full of blue liquid, the antifreeze. The jury saw photos of garbage taken from around Robert's farm. It contained the remains of Mona Wilson, one of the 6 victims he was on trial for. They heard recordings of Robert talking about killing heroin addicts with windshield wiper fluid. An associate was recorded saying Robert liked killing prostitutes by handcuffing them, stabbing them, and gutting them before tossing the remains to his pigs. While sitting in jail, Robert said this to an undercover cop posing as his cellmate. On December 9th, 2007, the jury found Robert guilty on 6 counts of second-degree murder, and he was sent to prison for life with the possibility of parole after 25 years. Dave was never charged in connection with his brother's crimes. He claims he had no idea that Willie was bringing women back to the farm, killing them, and feeding them to the hogs. In 2016, Robert managed to smuggle a manuscript out of prison. Apparently, he'd been busy writing a memoir about his crimes called Picton, in his own words. Someone he knew on the outside self-published it on Amazon. When people found out about it, they were outraged. More than 50,000 people signed a petition to make Amazon take it down, which they did just days later. As of 2023, Robert is still alive and still in prison. He's in his 70s now, and hopefully he'll stay in jail for the rest of his life. He's regarded as the most prolific serial killer in Canadian history. Ask any Canadian about him, and they'll probably tell you that around those parts, Robert Picton is known as the Pig Farmer Killer, or simply by his 2-word nickname, the Butcher.
And that's your recap.
Thanks for hanging out with us today.
If you like getting all the crime in half the time, go ahead and tap that subscribe button so you never miss a story.
But don't go away. Catch up on more recaps right here, right now.
Until next time. Take care.